Mahati Padavama Sutta. This discourse appear in middle length saying, first book, the 28th discourse, a greater discourse on the simile of the elephant's footprint. Thus have I heard, at one time, the Lord was staying in Savatthi, in the Jetaguru, in Anathapindika's monastery. There the Venerable Sariputta addressed the monks, saying, Reverend monks, Your Reverence, these monks answered the Venerable Sariputta in assent. The Venerable Sariputta spoke thus, As Your Reverences, among all creatures that can walk, all pedal qualities are combined in an elephant's foot. And as the elephant's foot is chief among these in point of size, so Your Reverences, all skill states of mind are included among the four Aryan truths. Among what four? Among the Aryan truth of suffering, among the Aryan truth of uprising of suffering, among the Aryan truth of stopping of suffering, among the Aryan truth of cause leading to the stopping of suffering. So, you can see that any Dhamma we take, whatever way that, you know, Patiksamuppada dependent origination, or any four foundations of mindfulness, or the seven factors of enlightenment, any Dhamma is, it's inside this, the Four Noble Truth. That one is the biggest. Any, like the anyone's footprint, if you actually look at the elephant's footprint, everything goes under elephant's one, because elephant's one is the biggest. Likewise, anything is among this Four Noble Truth. It's a very big statement over there on its own. And what Your Reverences is the Aryan truth of suffering. Birth is suffering, and aging is suffering, and dying is suffering, and grief, lamentation, sorrow, tribulation, despair are suffering, and not getting what one wants, that too is suffering. In brief, the five groups of grasping are suffering, and what Your Reverence is, are the five groups of grasping, just this, the group of grasping after material shape, the group of grasping after feeling, the group of grasping after perception, the group of grasping after habitual tendencies, sometimes it's volitional formations, the group of grasping after consciousness. So, Venerable Sariputta explained what is the truth of suffering. So, each one of these terms, I mean, if you try to explain, birth is suffering, it would take about 40 minutes to explain what birth is suffering means. It is that detail. That one itself is the biggest out of all these things. The birth is suffering part. Well, simply, if we look at little bit detail. So, when Buddha explained that birth is suffering, that he said that beings are born into various realms, various forms. So, where are we born? That we'll be born in hell. And then the animal realm, and plane of departure, and then the human realm, and then divine realm, and the Brahma realm. So, if you think about suffering in the hell itself, it is really, really big. There are various, there are 126 of those, and suffering in hell is, you can't describe. Buddha said in Balapandita Sutta, in the middle end saying, that Buddha gave some examples that, how they are getting burned and all those things. And Buddha explained various means, and Buddha said that I may explain it this way and that way, but still I cannot describe the suffering in the hell. So it is that great. I mean, I have said my own experience about this hell, that how people being born and then they will be sort of subject to this mass-scale suffering. Some are being born, and as soon as they are born, they pass away at that particular time. Being born again, the Avicii hell, for example, is a terrible place where there is this like a molten lava type thing. It's the earth is burning over there. So beings are sort of being born over there. As soon as they are being born, like that, if you put a wood stick into a great fire, you can see that it just shrinks. Like that, those people, they shrink, you know, they can't do anything, they can't go anywhere. As soon as, like, Imagine a baby sort of being born in a certain place. As soon as the baby is born, baby dies, right, with the pain. Likewise, these people are sort of being born as soon as they are born, it's just their time. And they've been born again in the same place. So you can see the everlasting burning is until their karma is, you know, go away, they've been born in the same place. So one would sort of think that we are sort of being born and we live for some time, then die, and this person is straight away dying. But that is the worst, because this is the sanskara or the volitional formation. That person, he is actually constructing his body or whatever thing it is. As soon as that person constructs, get destroyed. So that's the worst. Because if it lasting for 100 years or 50 years or something, then you are sort of happy. Like a person, a carpenter constructed some sort of a wood piece, some sort of a table, and it lasts for 1 month, 2 years or something, then he is happy. But imagine he constructs something and as soon as he constructs, it's fallen apart. Because from the volitional formation, we construct. We construct these things because we want. And we want to form something. The carpenter constructs because he want to earn money. There is something over there. But the construction, if the engineer is constructing a bridge or something, then he wants that one to stand last. So that's the worst place. So, I mean, I can keep going on that hell things. And so you can see how much suffering over there, the born in hell. And then the animal realm. If you are born in animal realm, how much suffering over there? For example, you know that some people, even in Sri Lanka, they protect their properties, that this parapet wall is about that high. And people are afraid quite a lot because these robbers come and steal their property, right? Now, imagine that fear that you have had before. Otherwise, you don't see this one. You got to have the fear, not for those people, for yourself. In such and such a day, I had this sort of a fear. Because that someone come and grab my purse or my car or my something, right? We normally get those things go away very quickly. But we need to remember that these things are actually has happened to us and can happen and scenario. Now, what are we afraid of? Normally is the property, right? What would the animal is sort of afraid of? They're afraid of their body being taken by somebody, you know, some other animal. So the suffering in the animal realm is really, really big. Although people are not thinking about it, they are afraid all the time. And humans sort of live with some sort of a, you know, protection, the civilized society or something, but still, there's quite a lot. And to think about the animal realm, it is, there's no protection. And the plane of departed, Preta, that they have really big bodies, like maybe taller than a tree sometimes, thin on the top, very fat in the middle, like fat size. Walk very slowly, some of them, because they can't. And tiny little mouth to feed on, and they cannot be satisfied. So, again, that's suffering over there. And in the human realm, how much suffering we have. Imagine that we were born and then we, you know, struggle to grow up. And then you go to school, taking your books and all those things, and then study and all those things. Troublesome world, and then you are going to earn money. And then aging, sickness, aging, and death. If you recall your past, you know, life up to this point, what was the happiness? You can see that it has been that bad already, and it's going to be bad when we grow older, and got a lot of suffering here. To divine realms, again, they are suffering because they pass away as well. And if you, sometimes it's sort of hard for someone to think about suffering in these worlds at the beginning, but you live longer, but when you pass away, that, you know, imagine that you have some sort of comfort for a long time and then you are going away from that one. So that's a big suffering. If you have a job for a long time and you are fired like that, because most beings, whatever the realm is, at the end of their life cycle, Buddha said, from all the realms, most beings are born in hell, animal realm, and the plane of departed. So there's no, unless one becomes stream enterer or once return the person like that, that one is bound to go into these realms.
Is it special because when people don't know Dhamma, they get an enormous fear at the end of the life, I mean, before death. And that, about that moment, they can't experience before, and they can, you know, after that they cannot adjust themselves to face that situation. There's hardly any time to do that. Because of that, do they get a bad karma at that time because of the fear and everything?
Quite a lot of things can happen over there at that particular time. Even if a person has been good, maybe somebody is doing some annoying thing at that time and went into the anger thought, that's possible to go over there. You know, the dying movement sort of things are sort of really bad movements. You are suffering from your own body. As well as that, you know, things can happen, other things. Or you may be remembering something that you have done bad. So then it's possible that at that time, and because of the bad thoughts, one can go there. What we cultivate is the one that actually paying back. So if you actually cultivate this moral habits, moral things, you know, that having five precepts, The advice that Buddha gave me was actually because I have done bad karma, and then Buddha gave me the advice that hold the five precepts and recall at the time of death that I have, you know, preserved this five precepts. So that's one thing. If you can recollect Buddha at that time, it's great. It's the greatest thing one can do, right? If you can't do that, well, at least maintain five precepts somehow, and recall that one at the time of death. I have preserved this one, so those are the ways to get rid of these things. But you got to have your five precepts properly. You know that if someone says I have five precepts, but I go and lie sort of thing, then it is not five precepts because those things are the ones that are coming up at that time. So if you are not contemplating, you know, don't have wise attention. If you have wise attention, that's good. So anything apart from the Dhamma is the one that's creating the problem.
So non-Buddhists, those who would not believe about karma, won't have any feeling, like any fear at the time of death?
Well, I mean, the most of the people, although they do not admit, has got that karma belief to a certain extent. Right. If they don't believe at all, don't have a view, that is wrong view, and with the wrong view, the Buddha said the two things that one can go into hell, animal realm things, is the wrong view and not having virtue. Those are the two main things. So, although that we sort of see certain people, they don't admit they believe karma, but probably they do good things, you know, that although they are not Buddhist, probably they are giving money and charity and some sort of thing, and maintaining non-ill will, some sort of a way. So there's a big probability, not knowing, one going to this bad thing.
Yeah, because not knowing is a biggest danger, because it's not a escape, because if you don't know about that, you get anger. Anything can come at that stage, because I mean, there's no control at all.
Yeah, if you build, let's say I believe in God or something, right? Mm-hmm. And then that he's my protector or savior or something, and then at a particular time, so where is he?
Yeah,
sort of thing, right. And then they generate the anger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that alone can happen. So this is only birth we are talking about. That so it's still not finished, because Buddha said that the appearance of this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind at the time of the birth. So you can see all these things that we get are subject to decay. For example, if I take my own father at the time of his death, when he was 87, that he couldn't see, he couldn't hear, the smell, can't smell, and then the taste, he can't even taste water. It's not tasty for him, right? And so the body doesn't feel that much. And the mind is not intact. Mind was not, he can't remember whether, you know, if you ask, have you eaten? So he would ask my mom whether, have I eaten? So it's like that. So you can see all those elements, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, they are subject to this aging process. And that alone is suffering. This is birth. Still we are discussing birth. And then the arising of these five aggregates, matter, feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. That arising is suffering. Because of the materiality, think how much trouble we have. Because of the body, we need to feed this one. We have to earn money to feed it. We need to put into sleep. So can't even put it in one position. You need to change the position, right? Why we change the position? Because it's suffering. Because it's painful. We have the pain all the time. So we change our posture, we move legs and all those things because of the pain. We can't bear the pain. So, and Petakopadesa, for example, explained that if someone is not thinking about the changing of this posture, he wouldn't understand why it is suffering. It is up to that level. So, the aging, sickness, the death, all these things has to be discussed thoroughly. If you are discussing this particular first part over here. And what you are reverences is the group of grasping after material shape, the four great elements, and the material shape that is derived from the four great elements. And what your reverences are the four great elements, the element of extension, the liquid element, the element of heat, the element of motion. So there are four things. First is the element of extension. The element of extension is that this paper you can see extend from here to here because of its hardness. There are things, certain soft things still, like a cloth or something, is still extend. So hardness or softness is the element of extension. And then there is this the liquid element or the element of cohesion. The cohesion is actually the intermolecular attraction force in physics. So there is this whatever the watery nature. If you look at the liquid things, then you can see you can pour those things as well. So there is this element of cohesion. And then there is this element of heat and element of motion, things that move in. So those are the four great elements. And then sounds and all those things are the derived qualities of out of those things. And what your reverence is the element of extension. The element of extension may be internal. It may be external. And what your reverence is the internal element of extension. Whatever is hard, solid, is internal, referable to an individual and derived therefrom. That is to say, hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinew, bones, marrow, of the bones, kidney, heart, liver, pleura, spleen, lungs, intestine, mesentery, stomach, excrement, or whatever other things is hard, solid, is internal, referable to an individual or derived therefrom. This, your reverence, is called the internal element of extension. Whatever is an internal element of extension, whatever is an external element of extension, just these are the element of extension. So that statement has to be taken wisely. Whatever thing it is inside my body, hair of the body, all those things are the element of extension. And outside also, whatever thing I see is also the element of extension. So, for example, I would see hair on the floor or excrement on the floor. So, the excrement is the element of extension. And the hair is also element of extension. There's no distinction over there. Both are the same, the property-wise element of extension. So what I have over here, then I would see is the same way like excrement, right? So then you can see if you have that equality maintained for whatever properties in the world, then you are actually losing that clinging to these things. because my hair is the same as the element of, it is the element of extension. Excrement is also element of extension. So they are both the same. So you see something outside on the floor, the hair, and you regard that hair as the element of extension. The one that I got over here is the same. So then one would lose the perception about that, the clinging part. That is how to generalize this one about the element of extension. So Buddha said that one can actually generalize this one. You see that if you take the element of extension, that the materiality and this earth, all those are the element of extension. So you just maintain the element of extension without anything significant about it. Like, you know, there are the gullies and the valleys, the mountains and all those things in the world. So when you think about the element of extension, it's like just sort of a flat thing, just element of extension. Buddha said, if you take a cow skin and get 100 pegs and, you know, pull it in 100 direction, then you get a very smooth thing, right? So there you can't see any wrinkles or anything like that. Likewise, you need to maintain it's just element of extension. To make it vast. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, it should be seen of this as it really is. Thus, this is not mine. This am I not. This is not myself. Having seen thus, this as it really is by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he disregards the element of extension. He cleanses his mind of the element of extension. That equating it to something that very insignificant is very important. Whatever thing we have in our body, you have to equate it to something very insignificant, like an excrement. So there you lose the clinging to that. So as you disregard the excrement or the urine or whatever thing it is as not yours, one would regard, so this is the same as that. So I disregard this one as not mine. The outside one is not mine. Therefore, what is inside is not mine. So each part over here, what is hard, is not mine. There comes to be a time, your reverences, when the element of extension that is external is agitated. At that time, the external element of extension disappears. The impermanence of this ancient external element of extension can be shown, your reverences. Its liability to destruction can be shown. Its liability to decay can be shown. Its liability to change can be shown. Venerable Sariputta made this statement having seen these things. That the earth, there is a time that this earth completely, burnt or completely burst and, destroyed. And because of the agitations. So, it is subject to destruction. So if this great earth is subject to this destruction like that, well, what about this short-lived body? If a big thing is getting destroyed, then this small thing, derived from craving, there is not anything here for saying I, or mine, or I am. I is actually ahanti. Ahantiva, mamantiva, asmitiva in Pali. Ahantiva is explained in Petakopadesa as a sensual desire for internal. The sensual desire for the internal. So if you have sensual desire and there is sensual desire for this body, that is this ahanti, I. And if there is sensual desire for the external, outside things, the car, lorries, cows or whatever thing it is mamanti, mine. Or my making. First I making, next my making. And by doing these things, we go into certain views, and because of views, we get this asmiti, I am. So those two create these things. Your reverences, if others abuse, revile, annoy, vex this monk, he comprehend, this painful feeling that has arisen in me is born of sensory contact or on the ear. It has a cause, not no cause. What is the cause? Sensory contact is the cause. If someone is blaming me, shouting at me, it's just, you can see, it's only the sounds that is coming up over here. And nothing happened to me, right? That person is making some like a loudspeaker. Right? And this is only happening, whatever thing it is happening inside over here because of the contact. He sees that sensory contact is impermanent. He sees that feeling, perception, the habitual tendencies are impermanent. He sees that consciousness is impermanent. His mind rejoices, is pleased, composed, and is set on the object of the element. So he is actually looking at that, the dhatu element. Hmm? So if it is impermanent, then whether that person is shouting or not, you know, it's just depending on the contact, this is arising. So he's not getting upset. So he's actually consider only this one as the element of extension. If your reverences, other comport themselves in undesirable, disagreeable, unpleasant ways towards that monk, and he receives blows from their hands and from clods of earth and from sticks and weapons, he comprehends. Thus, this body is such that blows from hands affect it, and blows from clods of earth affect it, and blows from sticks affect it, and blows from weapons affect it. But this was said by the Lord in the parable of the sow. If monks low-down thieves should carve you limb from limb with a two-handled saw, whoever sets his heart at enmity, he for this reason is not a doer of my teaching. Someone is cutting the arm with the, you know, the saw. Still, if a monk is actually having anger towards that person, that means he is not a doer of my teaching. He is not following this teaching. Unsluggish energy shall come to be steered by me. Unmuddled mindfulness set up. The body tranquilized, impassible. The mind composed and one-pointed. Now, winningly, let blows from hands affect this body. Let blows from clods of earth, from weapons. For this teaching of the Eighteen One is being done. So, if your reverence, this monk collect the Awakened One thus, if he recollect Dhamma thus, if he recollect the order thus, but there is not establishing him the equanimity that depends on skill, he is strongly moved because of this. He comes to a strongly moved condition and thinks, it is unprofitable for me, it is not profitable for me, it is ill-gotten by me, it is not well-gotten by me, that although I recollect the Awakened One thus, although I recollect Dhamma thus, although I recollect the order thus, the equanimity that depends on skill is not establishing me. If recollect these things, Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, but still the anger springs up, you know, so he is upset about that thing, it's unprofitable. Your reverence, as a daughter-in-law, having seen her father-in-law, is strongly moved and come to a strongly moved condition. So your reverence, if while this monk is recollecting the Awakened One, Dhamma and the order, the equanimity that depends on skill is not establishing him. He is strongly moved because of this. He comes to a strongly moved condition and thinks it is unforgettable for me. It is not well gotten by me that although I recollect the Awakened One, thus Dhamma, the order, the equanimity that depends on skill is not established in me. But if your reverence, while this monk is recollecting the Awakened One, thus Dhamma, thus the order, thus the equanimity that depends on skill is established in him, he, because of this, is pleased. Up to this point, your reverence, much has been done by the monk. So he recollect the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And if he is not getting equanimity out of that one, skill states is established. If he is not getting established, then he is very upset. Because I'm a person who is going in this, the teaching and following the order, but still I can't make it up. It's like a student who studies for the exams and things and studies and so on, but you know, he's not getting results, he's not getting concentrations, sort of
because
thing.
Because it's clinging is too much, isn't it?
Well, in this, yeah, clinging to the other one too much, yeah. So because if that person is clinging to whatever thing it is, sometimes one would cling to anger as well, quite a lot. And delighting on anger, one wouldn't be able to get out of it. Even he recollect Buddha, but still he can't. So he's getting upset about it. But if he is recollecting Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha, then his mind becomes straight. Buddha said always that if someone recollect Buddha, his mind becomes straight, that well established in these things. But to do that, one should know about Buddha in the sense that, you know, his Vijjacharana, that is this the knowledge, three knowledges, and then the conduct, 15 kind of conduct. So that includes this the effort, mindfulness, and hiri, that is the fear of the shame of doing evil things, and the fear of doing evil things. All those things good to be remembered. So 15 things over there. And so if someone can actually go through that, he is actually going through the actual Dhamma. The Itipiso Gatha, you know, this one is really big.
But in this thing, it says that even though he knows that,
no, he recollect, but
he still can keep on it.
Yeah. Then he is getting upset. Mm-hmm. If he recalling the Buddha, the qualities and sort of thing, then he's getting mindfulness establish and so equanimity remains, then he is really happy.
For that moment.
That moment. Yeah. So he got rid of that particular moment. It is that always that moment by moment we get rid of these things. So even for a person who is going to a higher concentration, maybe living there for hours, but coming down again next moment, one would be maybe angry. So at that moment also one should go into either recollecting Buddha. So eventually, that what this means is all the time we need to keep on recollecting Buddha Dhamma Sangha in other words, right? That is, that's the way to do it. And what you reverence is the liquid element. The liquid element may be internal, it may be external. And what you reverence is the internal liquid element. Whatever is liquid, fluid is internal, referable to an individual or derived therefrom, that is to say, the bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, serum, saliva, mucus, synovial fluid, urine, or whatever other things is liquid fluid, is internal, referable to an individual or derived therefrom. This, your reverence, is called the internal liquid element. Whatever is an internal liquid element and whatever is an external liquid element, just these are the liquid element. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, it should be seen of this as it really is. Thus, this is not mine, this am I not, this is not myself. Because that no one actually taking urine outside as mine. Does anyone take it? Right? There may be urine outside, no one. But if there is a nice waterfall or something, one would take that one, this is beautiful and so on, then it is mine, right? The mind is not mean that you are actually owning that one. There was some sort of a desire that come to be that I will come into this place, I will come to this place with such and such people, or, you know, enjoying and sort of thing, and all the things coming up with that. But it's not for the urine. But the urine and the waterfall is the same. Like the element of cohesion, both has got the same property. So you equate whatever thing that is good to whatever thing that is bad. And if you have maintained that perception, for both of them are the same, then you can see whatever desire you have for the liquid element, the nice liquid element, is sort of diluted because of the actually seeing the bad thing over there. Whatever thing there is bad, and whatever the perception you have, the anger or whatever thing regarding that one, will be diluted because of the desire for the good one. See, we always train our mind to be on one side. This is bad, not mine. That is good, it's mine. Rather than that one, we need to train our mind, you know, spread it, this one to that one. Having seen this, thus as it really is by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he disregards the liquid element. He cleanses his mind of the liquid element. There come to be time, your reverences, when the liquid element, that is external, is agitated. It carries away villages, and it carries away little towns, and it carries away towns, and it carries away districts, and it carries away districts and regions. There come to be a time, your reverences, when the water in the great ocean go down 100 yojanas. That yojana is sort of 7 miles or something. And when they go down 200, 300, 400, 500, 600, and when they go down 700 yojanas. There come to be a time, your reverence, when the water in the great ocean stand at height of a 7 palm tree. Water stand at height of a 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 palm trees in depth. And when the water stand at height of 1 palm tree in depth, there comes to be a time, your reverences, when the water in the great ocean stand at the depth of 7 means statue, 6 means 5, 4, 3, 2 means statue. And when the water stands at the depth of a merely one man statue, there come to be a time, Your Reverence, when the water in the great ocean stands at depth of half a man's statue. And when the water stands merely up to his hip, merely up to his knee, merely up to his ankle, there come to be a time, Your Reverence, when the water in the great ocean does not even wet a toe joint. It's not big enough to that. There's another discourse. Buddha said about there are 7 suns arising, and at that time, you know, everything burns, and even the stones, everything get burnt. So this is before that, because that there is only very, very little water at that time. The impermanence of this ancient liquid element that is external can be shown. Your Reverences, is liability to destruction can be shown. But if Your Reverence, while this monk is recollecting the awakening one thus, he is recollecting Dhamma thus, he is recollecting the order thus, the equanimity that depends on skill is established in him. He become, because of this, he is pleased. Up to this point, Your Reverences, much has been done by the monk. So this is actually shortened form. The same thing as before has to be applied. When one is actually recollecting, and there is a case that his mind does not establish in equanimity, and that time he get upset. And if it is sort of established in the equanimity, then he is pleased. And what Your Reverences, is the element of heat. The heat element may be internal, it may be external. And what Your Reverence, is the internal heat element. Whatever is heat, warmth, is internal, referable to an individual and derived therefrom, such as by whatever one is vitalized, by whatever one is consumed, by whatever one is burnt up, and by whatever one is munched, drunk, eaten and tasted, that is properly transmuted in digestion, or whatever other things is heat. Warmth is internal, referable to an individual derived therefrom. This, Your Reverence, is called the internal heat element. Whatever is an internal element of heat, whatever is external element of heat, just these are the element of heat. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, we should be seen of this as it really is. Thus, this is not mine. This am I not. This is not myself. Having seen thus, as it really is, by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he regards the heat element. He cleanses his mind of the heat element. So, there are bushfires and there is heat inside. So, they are the same. So, one would cleanse his mind from these things. There come a time, Your Reverences, when the element of heat that is external is agitated, and it burns up villages, and it burns up little towns, and it burns up towns, and it burns up districts, and it burns up districts and regions. When it has come to the end of the crops, or to the end of highway, to the end of mountain, or to end of water, or to lovely stretch of level ground, it is extinguished through lack of will. There comes to be a time, Your Reverence, when people seeks to light a fire with a cock's feather or with a snippet of gristle. So they take this little bone, piece of bone to set up the fire, because everything is burnt up. The impermanence of this ancient external element of heat can be shown, Your Reverences. So as before, the equanimity that depends on skill is established in him when he was recollecting Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. So that's good. He is pleased. And up to this point, Your Reverences, much has been done by the monk. So having seen the impermanent nature of these things, the external one, and having equated that one to the internal one, all the time that the phenomena here is, look at the external one. It is getting agitated. It's broken down and, going to pieces. So the internal one, this tiny little body, what about it? So impermanent is now applied to the internal one. And so this is not mine, and get rid of it, the desire. And what Your Reverence, is the element of motion. The element of motion may be internal, it may be external. And what Your Reverence, is the internal element of motion. Whatever is motion, wind is internal, referable to an individual or derived therefrom, such as winds going upward, winds going downwards, winds in the abdomen, winds in the belly, winds that shoot across several limbs, in breathing, out breathing, or whatever other things is motion. Wind is internal, referable to an individual, and derived therefrom. This view of reverences is called the internal element of motion. Whatever is an internal element of motion and whatever is external element of motion, these just are the element of motion. By means of perfect intuitive wisdom, it should be seen of this as it really is. Thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Having seen this, thus as it really is by means of perfect intuitive wisdom, he disregards the element of motion. He cleanses his mind of the element of motion. So these four elements, that element of extension, element of cohesion, element of motion and element of heat, they are all together. They are inseparable. So element of motion, that whatever thing moves in the body, the air moving upward, downward, all those things are the element of motion. And there is this breeze, you know, the outside, you know, shaking trees and so on. That's also the element of motion. So inside, outside, they are the same. So having seen that one would not regard that the element of motion outside, the wind flowing up, as mine. Similarly, the internal one is not also mine. But so when you say internal one, there is one very important thing we regard that as mine. What is that? That is the in-breathing and out-breathing. Why it is included as the element of motion. So breathing is very important for us, right? So that one is also not mine. So one should apply the same phenomenon. There comes a time, Your Reverence, when the element of motion that is external is agitated. And it carries away villages, and it carries away little towns, and it carries away towns, and it carries away districts, and it carries away districts and regions. There comes to be a time, Your Reverences, when in the last month of the hot weather, people are looking about for wind by means of a palm leaf, you know, fan, you know, that there's no wind, it's all gone, and a fan of fanning on the, fanning the fire, and they do not expect grasses in the top of the thatch, they're all gone. The impermanence of this ancient element of motion can be shown, Your Reverences. But if Your Reverences, while this monk is recollecting the awakened one, Dhamma, the order thus, the equanimity that depends on skill is established in him, because of this, he is pleased. If he doesn't, then he is upset about it. So if he is pleased, then means it's up to this point, Your Reverences, much has been done by the monk. That means the equanimity is maintained somehow by recollecting this way, either Buddha or Dhamma or the order, then he has done much. Your Reverence, just as a space that is enclosed by stakes and creepers and grass and clay is known as a dwelling, so a space that is enclosed by bones and sinew and flesh and skin is known as a material shape. That's a really good thing. In this place, what was there before? Where we are now, it's just the space. And then we put some wood sticks, you know, going up the ceiling and all those things, and then we call it a temple, right? Similarly, over here you can see what was there with the space. And we put the bones, the skin and the flesh around it, and then we call this.
There was an intimate, there's only the jnani there? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's just we are actually making a perception. We make a perception, this is a chair. What is it actually? And we say this one is a temple, right? Now we call this one temple because a Buddhist monk is here and the, you know, sort of thing. And if you take the statues and the monk out of this one, one can say this one is a house, right? We made it up from our mind and the perception over here. Like the house is the same thing. What was there was the space, nothing else. And we assemble something around it and then we say, it's a house.
Is there a line in the Dhammapada that talks about gaining enlightenment is like dismantling the house?
Yes, there is. So it's normally that, this is called guha, meaning that thing. We all live in a sort of a cage or cave, you know, sort of a thing, right? So this is our cage because of the craving. So dismantling means that they are not living in that. Because we are living over here, that's why we get fear if someone says, I'll cut your leg. An arahant wouldn't live here. That when the limb is taken out, it's fine. But for us, it's not. We got a house, we lock it, you know, all those things, right? Because of the craving. If there's no craving, that means door is opened. It's nothing protected. So, yeah, so it's dismantling the house and everything in that respect. Whatever is material shape, if your reverence is the eye that is internal is intact, but external material shape do not come within its range and there is no appropriate impact, then there is no appearance of the appropriate section of consciousness. The eye is internal, is intact, so that means eye is not broken. The external material shape, if I have my eye, if the external material shape, whatever the material shape, is not coming with its range. See, while I am here, there is something in Afghanistan that is not in the range of my eye. So that that part of the consciousness does not come to your eyes. Only if it is shown on the TV or something, so because it's came into the, you know, the close range, so that one is coming up. And with its in range, and also there is no appropriate impact. Impact in the sense that while we are talking here, somebody might drop a pin. So that impact is not with us for our ear, right? Like a lecture hall, somebody drop a pin, like that. There should be appropriate impact as well. Then there is no appearance of the appropriation section of consciousness. If your reverence, the eye that is internal is intact, an external material shape come within its range, but without an appropriate impact, then there is no appearance of the appropriate section of consciousness. But when your reverence of the eye that is internal is intact, an external material shape comes within the range, and there is appropriate impact, so there are three things over here, then there is thus an appearance of the appropriate section of consciousness. The Venerable Sarupa says the consciousness, that's how it comes to your eyes, nothing else. Whatever is material shape, in what has thus come to be, it is included in the group of grasping after material shape. Look at that definition. So whatever thing that is coming into this contact, the appropriate section of the consciousness come to arise, therefore I am including that one on the group of grasping under material shape. This chair is coming within my range, so I include it in this range. And if there is feeling, so for example, right, so that we get the contact for that particular feeling, and it's significant enough, and it is included in the group of grasping under feeling. Whatever is feeling in what has thus come to be, it is included in the group of grasping after feeling. Whatever is perception in what has thus come to be, it is included in the group of grasping after perception. Whatever are the habitual tendencies, that is volitional formations, in what has thus come to be, they are included in the group of grasping after the habitual tendencies. Whatever is consciousness, in what has thus come to be, it is included in the group of grasping after consciousness. He comprehends thus there is, so it is said, the including, the collecting together, the coming together of these five groups of grasping. This is a big statement. If you really see what Venerable Sariputta is saying in the previous paragraph, where the eye should be there, that eye should be intact, and then the form is within the range and is creating appropriate impact, that's the only time that there is this consciousness. Whenever that consciousness arises, then I include that material things in my group of grasping under material things. Otherwise, it is not so. This was said by the Lord. Whoever sees dependent co-arising, this is the dependent arising in the very short way. That's what Venerable Sariputta said over there. Whoever sees dependent co-arising sees Dhamma. Whoever sees Dhamma sees dependent co-arising. These are generated by conditions. That is to say, five groups of grasping. Whatever among these five groups of grasping is desire, sensual pleasure, affection, catching at, that is the uprising of suffering. That is dukkha samudaya, arising phenomenon. Whatever among these five groups of grasping is the control of desire and attachment, the ejection of desire and attachment, that is the stopping of suffering. Up to this point, your reverences, much has been done by that monk. If your reverence of the ear, that is internal, is intact, the nose, that is internal, intact, so regarding ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, and taking the mind as the last example, mind that is internal is intact, but external mental object do not come within its range, and there is no appropriate impact, then there is no appearance of the appropriate section of consciousness. This is the big problem. You know, all the time, mind takes up something. Something becomes very significant. And someone may not be angry, and another moment, just remembering something, then it's becoming angry. Because this became very significant, right? Another moment, for the same person, that when he is actually so happy, same thing doesn't create that impact. So you can see the impact is depending on the instance, the mood that you are in. Someone is happy, if you ask for something, they will give, right? If you are angry, then if you ask something, you get the verbal abuse, that's what you are getting. So it's all constructed. If your reverence of the mind that is internal is intact and external mental object come within its range, but there is no appropriate impact, then there is no appearance of the appropriate section of consciousness. But when your reverence the mind that is internal is intact and external mental object come within its range and there is the appropriate impact, then there is thus an appropriate appearance of the appropriate section of consciousness. Whatever is material shape, in what has thus come to be, it is included in the group of grasping after material shape. Whatever is feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness, they are included in the relevant categories by that person. So thus there is, so it is said, the including, the collecting together, coming together of these five groups of grasping. That is how we collect. That is how we become. That is how we, make it arise. This so said by the Lord, whoever sees dependent co-arising sees Dhamma. Whoever sees Dhamma sees dependent co-arising. These are generated by condition, that is to say, by groups of grasping. Whatever among these five groups of grasping is desire, sensual pleasure, affection, catching at, that is the uprising of suffering. Whatever among these five groups of grasping is the control of desire and attachment, the ejection of desire and attachment, that is the stopping of suffering. Up to this point, your reverence much has been done by the monk. Thus spoke the Venerable Sariputta, delight of these monks rejoice in what the Venerable Sariputta had said. This is a big discourse. See, the understanding is about the first starting with the Four Noble Truths and making that one as the biggest thing. And then Venerable Sariputta go by the elements, the five elements, and then the sixth one is the consciousness. So and then all the elements by intuitive wisdom, by looking at the external one, is getting agitated and therefore it is getting distracted. So what about this body? And there is nothing over here for me to take it as mine. So applying to those six elements, then without getting upset about this, somebody verbally abusing or something, so anger is not there, the clingy part is gone, and then who am I? What I am I? Sort of thing is sort of getting rid of. So the big thing given in very short form.
It is the same thing we just before we start we were discussing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
anatta. This anatta sanya is the most powerful thing that one can sort of easily concentrated arrived by means of these examples, these elements. That element that I was talking about, that trying to explain that the one got to get this perception right about the element of extension, the excrement, for example. I'm taking this example, some people may not like it, but if you equate that one to the hair and the body and any part of it, because what I'm trying to say over here, because I used this one for a long time, I used this one to get rid of this, the sort of getting out of these things and go into the higher concentration. As soon as you get the things that you do not give a damn, that it's a very insignificant thing, that the excrement is a very insignificant thing. But you should be sort of strong enough to recall it without getting anger. If you're getting anger or something about that one, then you can't. You can't do that part of the meditation. But otherwise, take the part that you do not like, you do not have any attachment, and equate that one to whatever thing you like in your body. There is no doubt that every one of you has got that attachment to the body. Everyone. Whether you know or not, it is there. And there is nothing else that you like more than your body. Right? It's not the father, not the mother, not the children, not the house. it is this house, the body. This house is the one that you like. You like it quite a lot. Very strong attachment. You can't see this one until you go into higher concentration. Because it's there with us. But when the doctor says that you have to cut your leg or amputate your leg or something like that, and that's the time you actually realize how much I like my leg. Until such time you don't see. So, since this desire is there, this is the sensual desire for the internal. But nothing else, sensual desire for the internal. To get rid of the sensual desire for the internal, Venerable Sariputta telling, use the external element. Because you are attached to this internal one quite a lot. Look at the external one. And think about the impermanent nature of the external one. Then since that one is the same as this, then you apply that perception over here. In order to apply, you need to maintain that external perception very strongly for a long time. 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 1 hour or something, until it gets into that level of concentration, and so that you do not cling to anything outside. And if you have that equal level over here, that this one is the same as this, and then you lose that perception over here. Unless you get that external perception right, you can't get the internal one right, because the internal one always attached. Because we have been holding this one from the childhood, since birth, before the birth as well. But that's why we got it, right? Having got it, even the small child will protect his body. And an old man who is near death still try to protect this thing, born out of this thing. So it is that bad. And when you pass away also, having used to have a body is a big problem. Even if you are living in a mind-made body situation, it's a really big issue not having a body. Like that one used to eat rice all the time, and if he's not getting rice to eat, then he's getting upset. Likewise, if you used to live with a body, not having a body is a big thing. If you apply the external one, and then to the internal, one can get rid of. So that technique is really good, but one should have the faith about what Venerable Sariputta is saying and apply. I think we'll stop for today.